1 Peter 3:15 says, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account of the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence." Are we ready to give a defense to our neighbors? This is Apologetics Profile, a podcast ministry of Watchman Fellowship Incorporated, equipping and preparing the body of Christ to defend the faith with reason, gentleness, and confidence.
We often hear statistics and stories about young adults raised in a Christian home going off to college for the first time and within the first year or two begin to question their faith, if not give up belief in God altogether. The audio clips you're about to hear are from a testimony of a former Christian who, back in the fall of 2015, was a student on a campus here in Texas and a Christian. He was having some doubts about his faith and ended up talking to an older adult atheist. He's the one asking questions in the clip you're about to hear, looking for students to interview about their deeply held beliefs with the intent of causing Christian students to doubt their belief in God. Here is Daniel.
A lot of my life I grew up in this Southern Baptist faith, which tells you that if you believe in God, your trip to heaven is 100%, basically. So it's like, it really doesn't matter as long as you have some sort of faith. And I did have at least some sort of faith at that time, so that was enough for me to say, yeah, 100%, right? But
you had doubts.
In reality, I had doubts.
Yeah, okay.
For sure.
Were you in a culture at that time or an environment where you were reluctant to express your doubts?
Absolutely. I mean, I was right next to my friend who was also a leader in the organization I was a part of. To express that kind of doubt would be potentially not good. Yeah.
Sure. Was there anything particular that you remember from that talk that stands out to you? Maybe a question that I asked or something that you didn't ask?
Oh, yeah. I mean, lots of little moments, but the biggest one was when you asked me, what was the difference between my faith in a God and a Muslim's faith in a God? How do you differentiate the two? How do you prove that one is better than the other? And I don't know if I had never thought about it before or maybe not thought about it in that way, but it just completely blew me away. Because how could I? You know, there's 2.2 billion Christians in the world, about 1.6 billion Muslims. You know, obviously these people have separate experiences. They can't all lead to the same truths, because their biblical and Quranical texts say otherwise. They're not compatible in the slightest. So something is going on there. And I think that the lack of a belief in a God has much more explanatory power than any theistic notion that a God exists.
I think we even talked about evidence and faith and which would you prefer.
Yeah.
Are you saying that you don't have evidence?
These
questions.
I went straight to the faith route, you know, like, because that was really all I had. I had no real physical evidence besides a personal experience, which, you know, may or may not be indicative of God. And as I've decided, it is not.
Okay.
Beyond that experience, I had nothing.
Daniel's story, unfortunately, is not uncommon. Though he grew up in a Christian environment, he had doubts he thought he couldn't talk about. He thought he had no evidence for his beliefs, nor could he articulate the difference between his faith and the faith of a Muslim. On a secular college or a university campus, God is certainly not much a part of the curriculum. Add to this the growing multicultural student body population of many campuses that greet young Christians who have left home for the first time, Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, and even a rising demographic of those who have no religious beliefs. The nuns, as statisticians have termed them. Young collegiates will often hear from their friends or even professors that faith is really an unjustifiable epistemology, something that simply isn't rational. True beliefs, they are told, must be supported by some kind of empirical or scientific evidence. But the belief that something must be supported by scientific or empirical evidence, in order for it to be true, is not itself a belief that can be backed by empirical or scientific evidence. For more on the question of how we can know what we know about God, do check out our series of recent podcasts on Christianity and epistemology with Christian philosophers Drs. Timothy McGrew, James K. Du, and Esther Lightcap Meek. If you or someone you know has students away at college for the first time, consider sharing these episodes with them. They provide ideas and resources from a more philosophical defense of the Christian faith, addressing the intellectual challenges many young Christians are facing today. Links to these episodes are featured in the notes below. Christian apologetics has been one way to help many struggling young collegiates understand the truth about Jesus and what he has revealed to us through his creation and his word. Authors Paul M. Gould, Travis Dickinson, and R. Keith Lofton, in their book Stand Firm, Apologetics and the Brilliance of the Gospel, define apologetics as, quote, an attempt to remove obstacles and doubts to, as well as offer positive reasons for, believing that Christianity is true and satisfying, end quote. On this episode of Apologetics Profile, we talk with Pastor Rich Day about apologetics in action from his experiences in ministering to both Christian and non-Christian students on the campus of a secular university. Pastor Day works as a facilitator for the campus apologetics ministry Ratio Christi at Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida. Rich gives us some valuable insights from his years of engagement with students. I spoke with Pastor Day earlier this year on the campus of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary during the Defend 2022 Apologetics Conference. As we began our conversation, Day explained the mission of Ratio Christi.
Ratio Christi stands for the reason for Christ. So it's Ratio, R-A-T-I-O, Christi, C-H-R-I-S-T-I. And that stands for reason for Christ. The idea behind Ratio Christi is to create an apologetics organization on campus that is not just another student organization, but that can be used as a resource. Number one, for students that are looking for deeper answers than they're getting in their normal Bible studies. We're not there to replace Baptist Collegiate Ministries or CRU or InterVarsity or whatever other group is on campus. We're there to augment. We want to give them deeper training, want to give them a deeper ability. We want to have the ability to go to those groups and do light training, just to give a little background to people there. But we also want to train these students up to be student leaders that not only can do evangelism on campus,
right,
but can utilize their new knowledge to go to the local community churches and teach them apologetics when they're looking and seeking, whether it's to a church Bible study group or, as we mentioned earlier, to kids or to young adults, people that need to have that foundation, that background. We have those people that we're training now in our student groups to go do that. And then kind of an Acts 1:8 thought. This is kind of the way I look at it, where Jesus said, okay, we'll start here where you're at, then go to the community around, and then eventually go out to the entire world. That's what I view Ratio Christi as being able to do. We're training those students on campus to then be able to go out into the community. And then when they graduate, they go out to the world. They're going out to whatever community they're going to be going to, whatever church is going to be blessed to have them with their training and their knowledge to be able to go there and continue what we have already started their training with to do that, again, wherever across the world they end up.
Day told me his interests in philosophy and apologetics began at a young age when he wanted a way to challenge his father, who was also a pastor.
When I first went into college, I went to Florida State, and my intention was to go there and major in philosophy. The reason I wanted to major in philosophy is my dad has been a pastor my entire life, and I wanted to learn how to win an argument against my father.
So I had
that want to learn how to have those discussions, those arguments without necessarily arguing, but really find the answers to questions. That was part of my early adulthood. And I think even in adolescence and childhood, that was something that I was seeking. And as I got into leadership within the church, I saw a lot of other people that were also seeking, also looking, mm-hmm. also wanting answers, very similar to experiences that I had, but they were not in position like I was as a pastor's kid to get answers. And even I didn't get the answers I wanted, so I kept on searching and researching. But I wanted to be able to provide those answers to the people that were seeking. Mm. And being in Tallahassee, which is where I'm at right now, we've got Florida State University, we've got Florida A&M University, and the second largest community college in the state. Mm. So a lot of college kids, a lot of people that are coming out of living with their parents, a lot of them experiencing being on their own for the first time. Mm-hmm. And as such, they are either people that were raised in churches and are now on their own and seeing things they've never seen or heard before, or even if they weren't raised in churches, they are now experiencing a new world.
Yeah. I mean, we have a challenge today, young people. I mean, people that have grown up in an age like you and I lived before the computer.
Yeah.
You know, these kids have grown up in the information age, and they're asking a lot of questions. I mean, you can Google anything now.
Right.
And so the questions that people have, young people have now, you know, we need to, I think, model those good answers incarnationally, you know, in ministering to each other in the presence of being present with people.
Right.
So it's a vitally important thing what you do. And so what are you seeing? What kind of questions are the kids that are coming to Ratio Christi on the campuses? What are they asking you? What are you guys talking about?
Well, I started in campus ministry about a decade ago. Mm-hmm. Started with Tallahassee Community College doing the Baptist Collegiate Ministries out there. And I still do that on the side. I run that at TCC. And for the most part, the biggest question I've seen throughout that has stayed constant is a search for truth.
Hmm.
And that can be on a variety of levels, but it all comes back to a search for truth. As you mentioned, you can find a lot of things on the internet. You can Google and get a question, but it doesn't necessarily answer. One of the things that will happen when you will Google a lot of religious questions nowadays, you can look at this generally on your first page, your first search results page, and I'd be willing to bet within the top three, if you look at where it's coming from, you'll see JW.org, because Jehovah's Witnesses have put a lot of money into putting their answers out there, to getting them at the top of search results, to getting them to where they're one of the first things that people see.
We just talked to David Henke, who is the founder of Watchman Fellowship, who started Watchman Fellowship, ministering to Jehovah's Witnesses. And David and I were just discussing how they have put, just as you said, a lot of emphasis online, because a lot of the Kingdom Halls are closing, and
right,
they're condensing Kingdom Halls, but they are also trying to make more of an online presence through their website and whatnot. So their kids are encountering all kinds of different information out there. So it's wonderful that you're doing this. What is Ratio Christi for people that don't know? And you know, what we wanted to talk about today was ministering to people on a secular campus, which is a huge thing, because these institutions of higher learning now are primarily materialistic, naturalistic. They're not entirely yet intellectual gulags against Christian faith. You can still have campus groups for Christianity, but by and large, this is a huge challenge, because I think Christian students, I used to go to a Reasonable Faith chapter at UT Dallas, you know, a similar outreach, but a very highly technical, mathematical, science-oriented campus. But Christianity is definitely a minority. You're not going to find a whole lot of Christians on the campus. So you have a huge challenge. You're up against the university with a small group of kids. What's it like?
My experience, like I said, I went to Florida State back in the mid-90s. My experience when I first was on campus there as a student, especially going into philosophy, was very similar to the movie God's Not Dead, where a vast majority of the professors that were there at that point in time were very anti-religion, very anti-belief in God.
Yeah.
And not only held that as their own personal views, but pushed that within their classes, pushed that within things that they were teaching.
Mm.
I've gone back now and talked with and been around some of the people that are on campus, and they've done almost a 180. They are, especially in the philosophy department, more open to listening to other sides. They're not necessarily agreeing with them now, but they are definitely more open to that.
Wow. That's
and 99.9% of the times, an apologetic conversation is just scratching the surface the first time you speak with somebody.
Right.
It's building relationships. It's taking the time to hear where they're at, to understand where they're coming from. And you've got to dig down and get through the layers and build respect and build trust before you can start trying to rebuild with a Christian worldview to even get those ideas sometimes out there.
Yeah.
And with what we've experienced over these past few years with COVID, it's made the relationship building very, very difficult. That's the hardest part right now, is building relationships. And to be clear, our students don't all have to be Christians. We are more than welcome with having people that are questioning, people that may say, I'm an atheist, I'm agnostic, I'm Muslim, I'm Mormon, whatever. They're more than welcome to come and join in and be part of our discussion.
So this is more, it sounds like it's a little bit discipleship, or primarily discipleship, and a little bit evangelism too. You have some interesting talks with people that are not believers. How does that?
Yes.
So in a typical evening, you guys have a once a week, or
we meet once a week. But I am very open to anybody else reaching out and say, hey, can we grab some coffee? Can we grab lunch? Whatever. If they want to sit down and go deeper on a topic, or discuss even with me and a couple of people getting together and talking about one main thing. We will do whatever we need to do, and I encourage our student leaders to do the same with other students. So it's not just myself as a director doing this all myself. It's working to create the student leaders who can also do the same, and growing them and building them.
I know you're here talking about your presentation that you're giving.
Yes.
Here at Defend is doing apologetics on a secular campus.
Yes.
And so why don't you kind of, with your experience, Rich, go into some of these, some tips for our listeners, because I'm sure there's at least a few people who are who listen to us who do something similar, who are involved in some kind of group. And even if you're not on a college campus, I think some of the insight that you could bring would really be helpful to all of us anyway, because we live in an increasingly secular society.
Right.
And so whether we're doing it at the office or at school, or, you know, with our friends or family, that how do we, what's some good advice, Rich? How do we do apologetics in a secular world like ours?
Okay, well, the first thing is to realize where you're at. Every school is different, and every school is going to have a different makeup than the school down the road from it. And in that, just as a whole, recent research has shown that the number of people on college campuses who refer to them as quote-unquote nuns, that means they say they have no religious affiliation, that has tripled in the past two decades. The number of people who call themselves that. It started with 10% in 86 to 31% in 2016.
Wow.
So you need to realize who you're reaching out to at first. Now, you're not going to sit out there and try to promote a kid's cartoon show to a bunch of adults, although maybe some of them would, but typically you wouldn't do that. You've got to look at what your audience is and understand who they are. And typically, your college campuses are going to have a higher number of students or people as a percentage of population that have zero religious affiliation.
And it just seems like an apathy to some extent, too. The people just kind of like, eh, if you're religious, fine. If not, fine. God, no big deal, whatever. It just seems kind of like a meh.
That's where the understanding comes in, is a lot of these people that will identify themselves as, again, the N-O-N-E-S, the nuns, aren't necessarily nuns. Some of them are worried. What is my friend going to say if they know I'm a Christian?
Yeah.
I've had experiences, and I'm not really sure, and I'm starting to hear these things around campus, so I'm not really sure if I'm a Christian anymore or not. And, you know, a lot of these people, just because of the questions they have or the societal pressure they feel upon them, what have you, will still answer within those nuns, although they're not really. And that's part of the understanding of the makeup of the group.
Okay, so there may be a fear, a timidity that I'm still processing, but I don't want to identify as such, because identifying specifically as a Christian is problematic for my peers or where I am. I don't want to wave that flag because I'm not confident or I'm afraid or
right.
I'm working through things. And so that's good. So to be aware of your audience and ask good questions that are not intimidating, but that would allow the individual to be comfortable with you and sharing what they where they're coming from.
Correct. And that's where you get into the how. Once you have the understanding of the who, then you can move into the how. And the how is answered in two different ways. The first is the people who are open to and okay with having conversations with more than just you. They will come and get into small groups, get into student groups, get into places where we can have larger conversations. And I love the larger conversation groups because that's where you have a tendency to be able to go a little bit deeper because people will bring up things in conversations that the person next to you never even thought of within this area and allows you to start going into all of these things. And instead of just getting your answer that you looked for when you came into this student group, you're getting a whole bunch more and you're growing and you're getting relationships with the people that you're growing along with. And all of that helps immensely.
Iron sharpens iron.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And even within that, I've seen people that don't have a religious background that would not call themselves Christians come in and start asking questions. And
excellent.
As they do, they get answers that they never expected to have anyone even want to answer for them. Mm-hmm. They thought they were out on their own, kind of floating out by themselves, and they were on a sinking ship and didn't know what to do. They didn't realize there are people around them that are more than willing and actually enjoy getting into these talks to help other people out.
Right.
So student groups, small groups, those work very well for the people that are okay with getting into them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then you have your second one, which I've mentioned a little bit before, is personal relationship building. And that happens in a lot of different ways. On a college campus, it generally starts with tabling or being in a specific place at a specific time every week. For instance, if you are just going to hang out in the student union every week on Wednesdays for 2 hours, just so people know that you're there.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if you're going to have a table, a very visible table on campus on Tuesdays or whenever you're going to do that, you'll have the people that are timid, that are worrisome about how society will look at them or about how even other people will look at them in asking what they may even think is a dumb question that they're scared to ask.
Right.
They'll come by, and typically the way it starts is them just coming by and prodding a little of asking a small question, getting the answer, and they'll walk away. And maybe you'll see them 2 weeks later. And they'll come by and ask a slightly deeper question and spend a couple more minutes with you. And before you know it, they're actually sitting down and having a 30-minute conversation with you, asking more questions, wanting more answers.
It sounds like, from what you're saying, Rich, that what they need first is community.
Yes.
Because they get into that new environment. They're scared. They're away from home. If they go to Florida and they're from out of state, they've just left their community.
Yes.
And they're really looking for that. And it may be that it's who they befriend and who befriends them.
Yes.
That influences how they start to think and see the world. I'm glad you're sharing this with us because it seems rather than just stuffing the kids' heads full of knowledge, we want to love them, right?
You
want to have that relationship with them because that's going to continue the community that they so desperately need.
It is. And yesterday I was sitting in the student center here at the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, and one of the students came up and was talking to me about their experience on campus with various religious groups. And she pointed out that one of them, it's more like going to the fun zone. They've created nothing but things to keep you entertained. Pizza movie night or games or what have you. And she's missing the depth. So in creating community, creating relationships, you've also got to give them the depth. And that's where Roscio Christi comes in. Aside from the various other group Christian organizations on campus, is we want intentionally to give you that depth.
So what I'm hearing is there's two things that we have to keep in balance and not overemphasize one against the other is we don't want to be too relational, where to the point where we neglect the mind, and we don't want to be too intellectual to the point we neglect the relationship.
Correct.
So that's a reasonable balance, right? When you're talking about, because that's who Jesus is, you know, love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength.
Yes.
And so it sounds like that's, if there's anything that seems to be most important, it's balancing those two.
Correct.
We can't just have pizza and movie night.
Right.
And think we're developing community. And we can't just fill the kids' heads full of apologetic knowledge without having a relationship with them either.
Right. Absolutely. And I from my own experience, not only have I done work on the college campuses, I am one of those that will still go out to the places where students hang out. Some places where a lot of pastors or a lot of ministers may feel uncomfortable going, I will walk straight into them. And I've had some very deep, some very good discussions by going into these areas and into these organizations. When you are starting the intellectual conversation and getting into talking with people, one of the other things that you've got to really understand is vocabulary. Mm. You may have a vocabulary word that you utilize and another person will utilize, yet you have a different definition for each word. Mm. For instance, and let's not even talk about people that are coming out of the major religions. Let's talk about atheists, agnostics. When they have a view of who God is or who Jesus is, their definition is typically built on a myriad of things.
Yeah.
Things they've read, things they've heard, things they've seen, and they put this conglomerate together of their definition. So you've got to get on the same page with them at the beginning or as you're starting your conversation. Yes. To figure out if they even understand the question you're asking.
Right, right, right. Don't be lulled into this idea that if an atheist says God and you have this idea of God in mind, you're not generally talking about the same thing. Or
correct.
So in other words, like I had said to some atheist friends, I said, you know, we do our book club. And so, okay, so whether or not you think, whatever you think the definition of atheism is, okay, fine. We'll set that aside for a second and listen to what that person's definition of atheism is and take that person and try to understand where that person is coming from without assuming y'all are talking about the same things. That's
yes.
Critically important. That's understanding the language, understanding the culture, what you said earlier about understanding your audience.
Yes, because I've had just with the simple term atheist and agnostic.
Yeah,
I have had absolutely so many discussions with people on, well, I'm an atheist. Okay, well, tell me what that means to you.
Mm-hmm.
And as they get into it, you see that they believe in some type of higher power. And as soon as they go there, I'm like, hold on a second. Just to reiterate what you just said, they're like, yeah, absolutely. And then I lay it out. You're not an atheist.
They
go, huh? Say, well, by definition,
higher power.
An atheist doesn't believe in any higher power. And they're like, huh? I said, yeah. Yeah, you can go look it up yourself. I'm not asking you to believe me, but please just go look it up yourself. And just even the smallest things that can change a person's view simply by talking with someone else who actually knows what they're talking about instead of getting their information off the internet.
Right, right. And so it seems like some of them are carrying around the definition that atheism, I'm not a Christian, but I still might believe in a God. So there's the definition of atheism, when somebody says it, it's so malleable within the atheist community. We need to take time to listen to what they mean by what.
Yeah, well, not even the quote-unquote atheist community, just within community around college campuses, because there are a lot of terms that float around out there in the verse of everything. And they'll hear the term, it sounds good, and everybody else is saying it. So, okay, that's who I am. Without really realizing the background of it. That's just, again, defining the terms.
Yeah.
Explaining the terms, defining the terms.
One of the first things I did at Watchmen, and afterwards, it was a small congregation of older people, and afterwards, a lady came up to me, and she was so cute. She said, I talked to an atheist once. but the idea that the atheist, you know, here is a mindset where the atheists are out there, kind of like wild animals or something, and oh, every once in a while I talk to them, and oh, bless you for talking to atheists, you know, but they're human beings,
right?
And but we have this it's like anything, Rich. I mean, we hear the name or the label and we put them in the little box, and then we think we have to talk to that person that way or that person that way, instead of actually getting to know and to think about what these people are really like. And that's what we do with our book club.
Yeah.
Kind of a similar thing, to get to know these people and their objections and their thoughts and take them where they're at and minister to them in the long haul, which
yes.
is what you've been doing with Russia Christie, right?
Right, and that's where my view of apologetics, and most people look at apologetics and say, okay, apologetics is useful to be able to defend what you believe and why you believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's so much within that one word, defend.
Yeah.
It number one doesn't mean, if you read basically where we get this from, where we look into Peter saying, hey, this is, you need to be able to defend. It also goes on to say, do it with gentleness and respect. So it doesn't mean create an argument.
Sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, which is, as you said earlier, getting God first.
Yes.
And then recognizing your position before God, because then when you do, only then can you exhibit gentleness and reverence in your defense. So
yes.
There's a threefold thing: God, your position before God, and then the necessary humility to give a defense.
Yes.
It doesn't mean the apologia there doesn't mean proof. We're not setting these kids up to give people foolproof evidence for God's existence, but reasonable, rational defenses. But putting God first.
Yes.
And our relationship before God first.
But there's still more.
There's more
to the defend word, because if you are talking about somebody who actually was doing fine, had a great time going to church, had fun in their youth group, had fun with the friends they had there, yet an event happened that caused them to lose their faith.
Yeah, that's...
And sometimes, unfortunately, in churches, it can be all types of events that should never happen in any place.
Mm.
And in order to get that person back to belief, it's not defending the faith that they already had a background in.
Mm.
It's helping them get past the understanding of that was not
that event, whatever
that event,
it was.
That event was not yeah. any part of that.
And how many of us in our own lives have the event or one or two events
correct.
That we were able to work through? I think it's Paul who says, you know, we suffer so that we may comfort others. You
yes.
know, we go through these things so that we may comfort others in their distress.
Yes.
Recognizing that your trials and tribulations can contribute to helping another, especially younger people, get through those roadblocks, as you've been talking about, those
yes.
barriers, those events, whatever that thing was, empathetically understanding where they're coming from there.
For me, it's like looking at a roadmap. And the roadmap all starts with you. The roadmap all ends with God. But for each person, that roadmap is going to look different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a trained apologist can help you walk through that roadmap, as different as it looks person to person.
Yeah,
they can help you get through that. And,
yeah.
and that's what I love about Ratio Christi. As they're blossoming, they're starting to grow on college campuses. I think they have a really good setup on how they're approaching it. They are looking for people with an apologetics background that are interested in becoming missionaries in your local colleges and universities.
Hmm.
And they'll help you learn how to raise your own support, but you really, literally, can be a missionary on that campus for Ratio Christi to reach kids with apologetics.
That's
and
fantastic.
That's phenomenal. And I love that we now have yet another place for our students, as they come through our seminaries, our Bible colleges, get trained in apologetics, can go out into the mission field. Not just get a job out there with your knowledge that you now
yeah.
have, but really go out into the mission field and do work on the ground, boots on the ground, working with people,
serving
one-on-one.
God vocationally and
yes.
ministering to people. That's fantastic. So we will put this information, if you're interested in the Ratio Christi, this sounds interesting to you. Rich, you'll give me the links and the information.
Absolutely.
And we will include that in the description notes of our podcast, in case you want to. And I would recommend, as I've done it, I've only ever done this on a volunteer basis, but having spoken at the Reasonable Faith chapter at UTD, and getting involved with those students, you know, there's good fellowship, and it's a tight-knit group. Alan Hainlein is the one who runs, a friend of mine who's in our Cosmos book, but Alan runs that out there at UTD, and it's just a wonderful group. Alan has relationships with the kids. It's fun to go in there and talk to them, and they ask really good questions, you know, and it's a a discipleship, friendship, relationship. And there's, you know, Muslims and non-Christians come into this group just out of curiosity, Hindus. And
yes,
we don't go to the nations. The nations are coming to us now. So this is a phenomenal opportunity, especially on the secular college campuses. You see a wonderful diversity of people from all over the world coming to study in the U.S.
Absolutely. And for if you, with the information that I'm going to give you guys, you are able to look up to see if there's a Rosh Hashanah Christi chapter near you. If you'd like to go check them out, hang out with one of their meetings, or even want to volunteer. We're always looking for people to help out, even if you're not looking to become a missionary on campus or what would make that step. We're always looking for people that want to get involved with apologetics to reach students.
And you as a group leader can attest, and I'm sure Alan does too, you all appreciate the volunteer help.
Oh, absolutely.
It's fun.
Anything that can help.
Yeah, it's fun. I would go to UTD more if it wasn't so far away from my house, but it is a delight to be able to minister to the kids like that. It really is. And the questions they ask and just meeting people where they are and just hearing their stories.
Absolutely. That's one of the things I love about working on college campuses is it helps keep you young.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And it's all, you know, it's a mindset too of being young.
It is. But it's just a blessing to be able to be out there working with these students, helping them at a critical juncture in their life where they are just trying to really figure out who they are and what they really believe. And when you can lay some foundation and some groundwork in those students, it just, you never know. You never know where this is going to go.
Yeah.
And you may not change a huge part of that person's life, but you never know what that person's going to do down the road in changing someone else's.
Right. Well, you look at Paul on Mars Hill. Some people thought he was babbling and crazy, and some people believed him.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the Areopagus where they discussed ideas. And so here we are 2,000 years gathering and talking about ideas. And the resurrection, Paul concludes, you know, he starts with the Greek poets, and then he ends with the resurrection in Acts 17, and some of them thought he was nuts, but some of them believed. But, you know, we sow seed. We plant seed and let
Absolutely.
God put it in the soil, and he knows where it's going to go.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up, Rich, anything else we didn't touch upon that you want to emphasize about doing apologetics in a college campus?
Yes. Students ultimately are on a college campus to learn, to be able to get their degrees. And you have various organizations like Rosh Hashanah Christi and other Christian groups on campus. None of that, not even Rosh Hashanah Christi, none of that can replace your local church.
Mm.
None of that can replace the relationships that you can grow along with in your local church, where you have older people, younger people, people of all walks of life who've been through life. And we're intended to be together so that we can grow with one another, so we can support one another, so that we can just completely learn how those relationships work within everything as we point to God. So don't ever stay away from your local church. Make sure you find a local church. Yeah. Make sure you plug into one. Just do whatever you need to do to be involved in a local church.
We thank you for spending time with us this week on Apologetics Profile. And we here at Watchman Fellowship would like to encourage you to share this episode, along with our recent previous episodes on Christianity and epistemology, with anyone you might know who may be away at college for the first time, or with anyone who is struggling to answer philosophical challenges to their faith. Our podcasts feature a variety of resources that can help meet these challenges head on, whether it's philosophical atheism or other religious claims. And speaking of other religions, we here at Apologetics Profile are getting back to our roots in the next 4 weeks as we discuss Christianity among other religions and the religious pluralism of our time. How do we reach out to people of other religions? Where do we start? What do we say? What if I know next to nothing about these religions? Don't worry, we have you covered. If you're asking those questions, the next 4 weeks of podcasts are just for you. We are excited to feature once more Dr. Gary Habermas in two extensive interviews about what distinguishes Jesus and the Christian faith from all other world religions and non-Christian worldviews. We'll also be hearing from Mama Bear apologetics researcher Lindsay Mendenwald as she discusses how Christians can understand and respond to our culture of increasing religious pluralism. Both interviews with Gary and Lindsay will feature a variety of free resources to help you converse with someone of another faith or someone who has no faith at all. Be sure not to miss those interviews. Apologetics Profile is a production of Watchman Fellowship Incorporated, Arlington, Texas. For more information about our ministry, be sure to visit watchman.org. That is watchman with an A, .org. And for Watchman Fellowship and Apologetics Profile, I'm Staff Apologist Daniel Ray. We'll see you next week.